Oh man, let's give it up for the band leading us in worship today. Good stuff. Well, if you're a guest with us today, this is kind of our women's retreat celebration. Every year, the sisterhood goes away for a weekend, and they have an incredible time, and I know that I've already heard incredible stories of life change that occurred. And then when they get back the Sunday after, it's our celebration Sunday. So if you walked in today, you chose a good Sunday because the Spirit of the Lord truly is here. And Carrie is going to be bringing our message. So the hottest women's pastor in Frisco, Texas. For those of you that are guests, this is my wife. So it makes it okay that I say that. But anyway, without further ado, I give you Carrie Bourne.
He thinks it's so funny to say that. I know I'm not supposed to hold it up. Is that better? Okay, sorry, I'm learning. I have broken a headset before, maybe two or three of them, so I'm relegating myself to the handheld microphones. Also, I'm not sacrificing my earrings, not happening. So we're gonna do handheld. I'm so glad that you're here today. We are so excited. Wasn't worship amazing? Can you feel it? Can you feel the Lord's presence? When someone goes away, and when you have 200 people go away and have an encounter with God, you can't help but come back filled up. So we're so glad to share this with all of you today, with your families. Husbands, thank you for sending us off. We had an incredible weekend, and we saw some amazing things. So today, I'm going to share with you the message that I shared with the women on Thursday night, which was all about being refined. That was our theme, as you see here. And so we talked a lot about what that means. So as we get into this, I'm going to have to shorten it because I think I had about 45 minutes and I don't today. We opted for longer worship. Is that okay? So the message is going to be a little bit shorter. But we wanted to bring this back to you. And those women who are here who did not get to attend, we're hoping that you get a small piece of retreat today by being here for this message, and you can hear and see some things that we experience so you can feel a little bit a part of it. So without further ado, we're going to go ahead and get into our message today. So we talked about the theme of being refined, and we really wanted to define what that means at the very, very beginning so we all understand. Now, we talked about how, you know, whenever we think of someone being refined, I think of like a classy lady, right? Someone who's well off, who's always put together, who looks nice, who has amazing etiquette, manners. Anybody feel like they weren't raised with the etiquette? You get to be an adult and you're like, somehow I missed that card as a child. So I think about the women that I know that are refined. And I think that they've been through some stuff. They've been taught how to do that. But when we're looking at the word and we see this idea of being through the refiner's fire all the way through the Old Testament, you see so many verses that reflect that. You hear that in the New Testament. And it has a different meaning than maybe what we're thinking. So if we think about just the basic definitions, if you guys could put that up there, the definitions of refined that we looked at this weekend go just like this: the subtraction of a non-essential extra substance in order to improve the quality of something, or to remove impurities in order to reveal its intended form. And I think now you could just spend some time studying these definitions because there's really so much in that. But it's the idea of removing the impurities in order to bring about the purest quality of something. So that's the definition. Now, if we think about the process or the distinctions of being refined, this is really going to help us as we tear into the passage in a few moments. But the distinctions of being refined, the process by which this is made, the refiner's fire, as the Bible talks about, the biblical process goes like this. First of all, there's God reduces. The refiner reduces, meaning he takes the ore, he breaks it apart from the earth, he takes these pieces that are large pieces, and he breaks them into smaller pieces that he can manage. And what we don't know, what he knows that we don't know, is that there's this precious mineral in the innermost part of this ore that he's trying to get to. The innermost middle of that ore piece, every piece, is what he's trying to get to. So in order to get to it, he's got to break it up into small pieces. And then comes the next step. That's number one, he reduces. Number two is he refines. And what he does here is he takes this long tool, there's this long-handled tool that has a pod on the end, an enclosed pod, and he puts these pieces of ore in the bottom in this pod. He closes it up, and he sticks this in a furnace, a really hot furnace, and the ore begins to melt and liquefy. And he pulls it out once he sees that it's reached a certain temperature. He pulls it out and he opens the pot and he takes a look And he, what has happened is all the impurities that were in there are starting to rise to the top. And so he scrapes off. He removes those impurities. That's step number three he removes. He scrapes off those impurities. He closes the pod back. He sticks that back in the furnace after he's turned up the heat just a little bit to the next notch. And he looks. He pulls it out. He opens up the pod. He sees the impurities again have risen to the top. He scrapes those off. He removes those impurities. And he does this again seven times. So seven times over, the refiner knows that he's got to take this in because the seventh time is the ultimate refining. He knows it's over after seven. He knows that it's completed, that he's reached the most purified state that this ore is going to reach. He knows at that point he's been able to bring out that innermost quality, the innermost impurity that he can find inside that ore. So he takes it, he lifts it up, and he sees after the seventh time, he looks really closely at it. And on the seventh time, the final step, number four, is that the refiner wants to be able to see his reflection in the mineral. He wants to be able to see his face looking back at him, his reflection. So the refiner then wants to see his reflection. So he reduces, he refines, he removes all the impurities, and then he's looking for his reflection in that. What a beautiful, beautiful process that we see here. God is taking something physical and he's showing us this grander point in the spiritual. Do you ever feel like God's doing that in your life? Like you're walking through something and you're like, okay, this has a deeper meaning than something that I originally thought. And so when we see these verses of being refined, the refiner's fire, if you've ever heard of that, that's exactly what this is talking about. In 1 Peter 1:7, this was sort of our verse for the weekend, we see a beautiful picture, and we're going to recall this more toward the end of our message today, but look at this verse, 1 Peter 1:7. This is what it says. So that the proof of your faith, being more precious than gold, which is perishable, may be found to result in praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ. So you see the process there, because the very end, the revelation of Jesus Christ is where the refiner begins to see his reflection in us. And that's what we're going to talk about today. So this was our story. We talked about a lady named Ruth. By show of hands, who has heard of Ruth? Anybody? Yes, a lot of us have. Anybody have "Where you go, I go; where you lodge, I will lodge," recited at your wedding? Anybody have that? Anybody hear that at a wedding? Not very many. I grew up hearing this at every wedding I attended. And it's funny because this passage really has nothing to do with weddings, but it's an interesting commitment that we see. It's a beautiful, beautiful passage, and we're going to dive into what that means. Now, I do not have time to read the entire story, but you guys are going to follow along with me as I sort of narrate. So in chapter 1 of the book of Ruth in the Old Testament, Ruth has this amazing story. In chapter 1, we learn this, that there was a woman named Naomi and a man named Elimelech. Didn't everybody name their baby boy Elimelech? There's some crazy names in the Bible. But Elimelech and Naomi lived in Bethlehem. They're from Bethlehem. And a famine came on the land, which means there's no food. They've got two boys, Mahlon and Chilion. Again, crazy names. Nobody names their people that. And they decide that they've got to go somewhere where they can find some food. So they hear about a place named Moab that's plentiful and resourceful, and there's plenty there to provide for their family. So they decide to move their family from Bethlehem to Moab to go find some food. So they do this. Now, we're kind of stating that in a really casual way, but can you imagine suddenly Frisco, Texas has no food and you have to find somewhere else to live? Anybody? You would never imagine that scenario is going to happen to you. But just in that, here is a family that has to leave everything they know, and with great leadership in their family, they follow to Moab, which is on basically the other side of the ocean that they've got to travel by foot and find. So they get to Moab, and then a verse tells us this. It says they get to Moab, and the next verse says, Elimelech dies. Now, we discussed that as women, we like to have more detail than that. We have many, many questions, but we don't know how he dies. So now she's left with her two sons, and they get married to Orpah and Ruth. Orpah. Any women, any girls in here named Orpah? So we have Orpah and Ruth, and they, for the next 10 years, lived happily ever after until Mahlon and Chilion died. And all we have is that they died. We don't know how. We wish we did know. We have a lot of questions when we get there. We're going to go find them. We're going to ask them, tell us your story. We want to know how that happened. So here they are. Now the woman is left without her husband and without her children. Anyone in here, before you move on, that's experienced any kind of loss, okay, just imagine what this woman was feeling. Because as I confessed at retreat, is I had not been able to get through this passage without tears until Thursday night. As I was preparing, because as a woman who has experienced loss of several different kinds, I can just imagine what she was feeling, and the emotions just sort of leapt off the page at me every time my eyes fell on these words. And the emotions really don't stop here. So now she's left without her husband and without her two sons, and she lives with her daughters-in-law. You can go on to the next passages. And one day she got herself together. Did you like that? I mean, like, get yourself together. You ever have one of those days where you just think, I really need to get myself together. This is the day. I'm going to get up and I'm going to get myself together. Look at your neighbor and say, you need to get yourself together. And if you have a good friend in your life, they might be the ones that say, listen, today's the day. Girl, you need to get yourself together. Or boy, you need to get yourself together, right? So I love how the Bible gives us these little phrases. One day she decided to get herself together, and she basically decided it was time to go home. So she's in Moab. She's got these two daughters-in-law that are from Moab, but she's not from there. Remember, she left her home, everything that she knew, to come here with her husband years and years ago. So she's ready to go home. Anybody been ready to go home? Today, as we were worshiping here, I was thinking how good it was to be home, to be back at GM, in this building, with our people, with our families all together. It's great to get away for retreat, but there's nothing like coming back home. And I feel that at Christmas times, I want to go home to my mama's house, I want to be with her, I want to eat her cookies. Anybody know that? She was ready to go home. So she's like, you know what, girls? Let's go. So they start their journey, and a little while in, it says, we don't know how long they had been walking, because they had to walk, that she stops and she says, hey, listen, y'all need to go back home. You need to go back to your home. You don't need to come with me. I don't need you. I'm fine. God has dealt me a bitter blow, is what she says. And she kissed them and cried openly. Now here's where the emotions from women relationships jump off the page. Because these women have been through some stuff together. Now, the women in your life, or guys, I guess you can say for you, but for us, this is a little bit more feministic here, is when you have women relationships that you've been through some stuff with, there's something special there, right? Like your closest friends, or maybe it's family members that you've been through some stuff with. But these three women are connected and bonded in a way that no one else on the planet is connected and bonded with them. This would be something they would put way up there if they were counting who their people were. They were each other's people, right? And so the idea that they would now be separated is a great emotional stress. It's a duress of a kind. So she says to them, go, and they're crying openly. And their first response is this, please, no. We're going to stay with you. We're going to go with you. We don't need to go back home. We're going to go with you. And she insists. They're still crying openly. She insists, and she says, listen, I cannot give you what you need in a life. My life is kind of over. It is what it is for me. This is the hand that I've been dealt. God has dealt me this. I've lost so much, but there's still hope for you because you're young. You can find a husband. You should go back home and set up camp there with your families. Find new husbands. Start over. And Orpah decides to do just that. She decides to say goodbye and go back home, knowing that she'll probably never see them again. But Ruth decides to stay. Let's get to Ruth's verse. I think it's in 13 or 16, somewhere down there. Keep going. Come on. Let's get to Ruth. Keep going. There we go. 16. Okay, so here is Ruth. And Ruth not only decides to stay, she sort of insists in a begging, asking sort of way to stay with her. Please don't force me to leave you. So we know that Naomi is being very strong in her insisting. Please don't force me to leave you. Don't make me go back home. Here's my commitment to you, Naomi. Where you go, I go. Where you stay, I will stay. Where you live, I will live. Your people will be my people, and your God will be my God. And she keeps on going. Even death will not separate us. Where you live, I will live. Where you die, I will die. That means this is a lifetime commitment for her. This isn't I'm going to go back and make sure you're settled, and then I'm going to come back home. No, she's saying, I'm going to go with you. I'm going to live with you. I'm going to die with you. I'm never going to leave your side. So they've got a connection. But Ruth has a commitment here that's pretty sure, pretty tight. There's no way this is going to come. And so then the next verse says that Naomi finally gives in, and she says, okay, I'll give in. If you're so insistent, you can come with me. So they travel on to Bethlehem. You can close that down now. So here is the story. Here's the setup. And we have all these different women to talk about. We have Naomi, who's lost so very much. We have Naomi, who is connected to these two women, unlikely connections, and she never thought she'd be in this position. And we see that she suffers such tremendous loss, but what we see is one of the things that we asked ourselves this weekend was, is loss necessarily a negative, right? Whenever we lose someone, and it's interesting, Casey, if you don't mind me sharing, Casey McConnell, one of our sisterhood who serves and gives faithfully, she returned home from retreat yesterday, and as soon as she walked in the door, she learned her best friend from her whole life had died over the weekend. And she has been living in that grief for the last several hours. And what she said to me this morning as we talked and shared that emotion, that loss together, what she shared was, God has told me, God has whispered to me, this is not a loss. It's a victory for him because she is finally free of all of her pain and all of her suffering. What a beautiful picture that sometimes loss is not always a negative. We don't know what God has planned through that. You never know what God has planned. But if we're Naomi and we're looking at it, this is her phrase, God has dealt me a bitter blow. Does anybody ever feel like, God, I don't really know why you're doing this or what you're doing, but this ongoing thing in my life, whether it's health issues or I cannot figure out how to make my marriage work, I cannot figure out how to communicate with him. My kids, I feel like they don't hear me. They don't know my job. There's no favor. There's no hope. It's misery every day. God, why have you dealt me such a bitter blow? And in the middle of it, maybe God is whispering that there's a greater purpose involved. That this loss isn't so much a loss, but if you look deep enough, if you let the refiner begin to remove the things and scrape those impurities away, maybe there's a greater purpose involved. That loss is not always negative. The next one we want to look at is Orpah, the unfortunate named one, Orpah. We have Orpah. Now, Orpah is going to represent, for our purposes today, someone who remained unchanged, right over here, okay? We've got Orpah who remained unchanged. Now, there's a big difference between wanting change and realizing change, right? Anybody want it? Anybody want it? Anybody not see it yet? Anybody wish they could overcome this certain addiction or this certain habit, or they weren't so much like this, but they just can't quite get there? Anybody feel that today? There's a difference between staying stuck and between stepping out into what God wants, because the stepping out is a lot harder. Because sometimes not changing, remaining unchanged, is really the easiest thing to do, selfishly. Right? It's easier just to stay here rather than go through all the pain of the refiner reducing, refining, removing the things in us. And then we miss that fourth step, which is that we never reflect him. So we see Orpah decides to stay. When given the option and pushed a little bit, she decides to stay. To stay back to what's comfortable. And from a human response, this really seems reasonable. Don't you think about it for a minute. Why wouldn't she stay home with her family that she knows? She can set up a life again. She can start over. It would be so comfortable. It would be so much easier to do that, anyone? So from a human perspective, it's reasonable she would stay. And it's unreasonable that Ruth would choose to go. Sometimes God gives us these options of what's okay, what's reasonable, and what's best for us. Sometimes we have the options to make. Sometimes the decision is hard because it would be okay to stay. It wouldn't necessarily be wrong. But if we choose the process, we find ourselves over here in God's best. And that's where we begin to reflect the refiner's face. So we see that sometimes God may ask us to do some things that are unreasonable in order to get the desired result, right? He may just ask us to be willing to choose the unreasonable so that we can be refined. Because the unreasonable, isn't that where God lives? Isn't that where he lives? If you think about the stories in the Bible that you've heard of, that we study, that we read, that we pattern our lives after, and if you don't, you should. We should be doing that. Those are the unreasonable parts. That's the God-sized stuff, right? That we talk about, that we want, that we pray for, that we long for in our lives. We want that unreasonable faith, the unreasonable results, but we have to be willing to choose it and walk through it in order to get there. And what I've learned through the years, Tim and I kind of giggled and chuckled at this, is in 20 years of ministry, and I can't even believe I'm saying that, because I still, in my mind, I'm like 23. Does anybody feel like that? I'm like in my 40s, but I still feel like I'm 23. Like I can do everything I did at 23, but I'm not. I mean, like I woke up yesterday morning. I didn't really do anything at retreat. I didn't do the over-under. I mean, I did beat Holly. I mean, the one race I had. And I just announced it to everybody. She does have a janky ankle, a jankle that we call it. So I did beat her. But I didn't really do anything. I woke up yesterday. My right knee was killing me. Anybody? Like, why? Why? What happened? I didn't do any. All I did was run on uneven gravel roads. Oh, maybe that was it. That was probably it. But I just think, you know, I'm young, right? In my mind, I am. But in 20 years of ministry, I have learned, I have seen that women, people in general, tend to use the same sort of excuses for not going through this process. Let's talk about what those might be. So, I want everyone to do a little exercise. For these five examples, I want you to pick which one you most relate to. Which one you most closely relate to. Like if I'm not quite describing you, but maybe a little bit, you can go ahead and choose that one. Number one, the avoider or the isolator. Anybody know what this person does? Just like act like, oh no, I don't know. Avoid people, avoid truth, pick up the rug, sweep it under. Anybody have like a big mound of something under a rug in your life that you just, and finally when you trip over it and fall face first in your life, you have to deal with it, but until then you just sweep it under the rug, isolate yourself. Maybe you're like the, nobody really wants to be friends with me. Nobody ever invites me anywhere. Probably because your face looks like that. That's why you don't get invited. The avoider, the isolator. Next, the avoider and the isolator, before we go on, is always alone and never accountable. That's the problem with that. Always alone, never accountable. The overcomplicator. Is anybody like this? The overcomplicator is always complicating, never committing. Yikes. Non-committal, anybody non-committal? Like, hey, let's go to dinner. Okay, let me check. I'll let you know. And you're like, no, the answer's no. Right? Let's get our families together so our kids can get to know each other. And you're like, in your mind, you're like, oh, heck no. Okay, sure, Friday night, great. And then at 6 o'clock before the 7 o'clock meeting, you're like, hey, we can't tonight. Sorry. Anybody, this person, over non-committal person, the overcomplicator, what they tend to do is complicate all the details. If you don't have the expectations, if they don't know the details, if you looked at them wrong, whatever it is, it's overcomplicated and they're out, right? I'm out. You didn't meet my expectations. You didn't answer my questions. You didn't tell me what we were going to do. I'm out. Or if you are the tiniest bit high maintenance in their mind, they're out. Nope. No, thank you. Next one, the dissenter. Always negative, never encouraging. If you've ever seen Saturday Night Live's Debbie Downer skit, this would be that person. It's been a few years since we saw that, but the dissenter is the one that doesn't matter what you say, there's something negative. Like, I love your hair. Really, I hate it. I think your kids are so cute. Really, they're brats. Your husband is so nice. He's an idiot. I mean, how many things can you say? Always negative. You did a great job on the football field. It sucked. The whole game sucked. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you say, how truthful it is, they're going to dissent. Right? Always negative, never encouraging. The next one is the coaster. always on autopilot, never proactive. This is a person that's kind of aloof, right? If I just do the things I know to do and never really take a deeper look, then life is fine. You wake up like in easy land every single day. Nothing ever bothers you. The coaster. Some of you can't sleep because of the stress in your life, and you can't even relate to this person. This person exists, I assure you. I've seen it over and over. The last one is the doer, always busy, never still. And so since I asked you to choose one to identify with, I will confess this is mine. I'm the doer. Anybody that knows me is not shocked by this at all. My neighbors say, hi, Carrie, bye, Carrie, because I'm in and out of my garage so much. Hi, Carrie, bye, Carrie. I'm always going, always going, always going. The problem, the downside with the doer, because, you know, some of you might think, well, yeah, she's always doing stuff. She's always doing stuff. What's the problem? If you're never still, you miss some stuff, don't you? You're always busy. You're in a hurry. You got stuff to do. You got stuff to say. And maybe there's some stuff that you miss along the way. And if it's God that you're missing, well, now we got a big problem, right? So what we do when God presents us with options in our life is some of us do all these things. We complicate it. And we end up staying stuck because we've complicated it so bad we cannot get over our own selves. We can't do what Naomi did, get ourselves together that day and move forward with the Lord and what he's doing in our lives, embracing the process of being refined. And so as we move on to Ruth and we describe her for the next few minutes, we're about to wrap it up, we're almost done. What we see is that Ruth represents someone who decided to embrace the idea that God would be refining her and removing the things in her life that might not be so good for her. And in that, what we see are these beautiful, beautiful lessons that the refiner's process always leads us to the right result. Because the thing is, when we decide to stay over here stuck, like Orpah did, we're never really going to get that intended result. Remember the definition at the very beginning? That the impurities are removed so that the creator, the refiner, can get the desired intended result. But if we do choose this like Ruth did, then what we're going to end up at the result that God wanted. We're not going to have to be a prisoner of our own excuses. And what we see is that God took Ruth's tragedy and she turned it into this triumph in her life. She took this season of her life that could have defined her for the rest of her life. And he turned it into something beautiful. He used her tragedy to turn it into a victory or a triumph in her life. Not only that, he used her pain to position her for what was coming, because we haven't even gotten to that part of the story yet. He used her pain to position her, and this is how he did that. In Ruth chapter 4, at the very end, there's all this story in between that we don't have time for, so you should go home and read it. The whole book is not very long. It won't take you very long, but there's a great big story in there. But the very end, this is her ending. Her ending is that she meets a man named Boaz, and they get married, and they have a son, and so she's redeemed. She's restored. She's lost her husband. Now she has a husband, but not only that, Boaz is a wealthy businessman. He's a godly man. He's a man of character. He's a man of high standing in the community. He will be able to provide for her everything that's been taken, everything that she's lost. So do you think way back in the desert, way back over here, when Naomi was saying, listen, you girls, go back home. You don't need to come with me. And something stirred up in Ruth that God was saying to her, you're going with Naomi. Do you think she had any idea what God was doing? Could she have ever conceived Ephesians 3:20 and 21 results in her life? That God was getting ready to do something so big, she could never imagine it. She could never put it down on paper. She could never dream it, but she got her knight in shining armor at the end. Could she ever imagine? Has God ever done something so big and great for you that you said, this is not something I could ever have dreamed? He's provided for me in ways that don't make sense on paper. Has anybody ever been there? You should be telling everyone the testimonies of that in your life. You should be telling of God's greatness, because there are some things that just have a God-sized mark on them, that he turns something seemingly destructive and impossible in your life, and he takes it to a triumphant place, because when we choose to position ourselves under the hand of God, he takes our pain and he positions us for being refined. And he provides for us in ways that we cannot begin to imagine. Now, if you look at who Ruth is in the lineage of Jesus, because she is, what you see in verse, let's put verse 17 up there. After the baby is born, it says the neighborhood women started calling him Naomi's baby boy because she was always holding him. And this son's name was Obed. Obed was the father of Jesse, and Jesse the father of David. That would be King David, the man after God's own heart that the Bible writes about. So Ruth is the great-grandmother of David, and that is the lineage of Jesus Christ, the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords himself. So do you think that Ruth, again, now we're the next layer up. You think all the way back here, she had any idea? Of course not. That she would be named in the lineage of the Messiah that was to come and save the world. So much loss, so much beauty, so much brutal, so much beautiful, all at the same time. Here is Ruth, having stepped out and asked for this process in her life. And look what God has done. He reduced, she's lost her husband. He refined her, meaning like he decided, we're going to turn up the heat and you're going to get put into this furnace and we're going to do this 7 times, Ruth. And this whole journey is going to feel difficult, but your security is gone. Your familiarity is gone. Your family is gone. But I'm going to provide more over anything that you can imagine, immeasurably more than all you can ask or imagine. He removes things from her. So think about it. Every step away from Moab was a step closer to what God intended for her to be. Every step of that journey was one step closer to her intended purpose. And that at the end, what we see is that the object reflected the refiner's face. And here is Ruth standing at the end of her life, named in the lineage of Jesus Christ, happy, settled, and walking in the will of God. God is the only one that can take your very worst day and turn it into your very best day when we're willing to walk with him. The process may not be easy. In fact, it probably won't be easy. Let's go ahead and admit, do you ever wake up and go, I am so glad and so thankful. Life is so easy. Anybody ever say that? What an easy week I'm having. Does anybody ever say, how are you today? You know what? Life is easy. It's great. No, we don't usually say that because life is not always easy, especially when we're choosing to submit before the Lord and allow him to refine us. It's going to be hard. That's not an easy process, but there's this glorious, beautiful, desired result at the end that we cannot get to without that process happening and taking over our lives. The band can come on out and start getting ready for worship. As we wrap up today and look back at 1 Peter 1:7, if you would put that back up. Here's this beautiful verse. So that the proof of your faith, being more precious than gold, which is perishable, may be found to result in this: praise and honor and glory at the revelation of Jesus Christ. So for our purposes, you can go ahead and take this. For our purposes, what the end of this verse tells us is that at the end of this process, once we have a revelation, a God-sized revelation from Jesus Christ, our Savior, once the Holy Spirit has come in and convinced us that he's at work and we're allowing that to happen, what does that result in? It results in praise and honor and glory and worship. We can't pour out enough in thanks to him. We can't begin to put into words the gratitude. Does anybody ever feel like that? Like, there's no way I can ever say it. How can I show it? How can I serve? But at the revelation that God has been at work, that God is going to do something beautiful that you can't possibly imagine, the result is always worship. That's the beautiful part of this. The one who deserves it all. May we not hold back. You can stand as we start to worship today. May we not hold back from him what we know that he intends to do, what we believe that he's going to do, what we welcome into our lives. So if you're here today and you're stuck in the unchanged, which may be one of the worst things that we can choose,
Let's ask God today to begin that process in our lives and say, we agree to be refined. We may not ever get there fully, but we agree that we are ready for you to do that so that we can see you working, we can see your face, and when it's hard, we will not back away and quit and go back. We will continue pushing through because we know that you're leading, you're guiding, and you're taking us to your intended desire and purpose in our lives. Let's worship.